flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Milliken's win! Milliken's win!
Now from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Live from downtown St. Louis, where we will be for the next 2 hours on KMOX's Sports on a Sunday Morning. Tom Ackerman indeed with you. It's always great to be with you. What a beautiful day this has turned out to be. It's going to be in the 60s today, said Scott Jago. Is that what he said? I think we're looking at a high around 60, I guess. Maybe not as toasty as we thought it was going to be, but Monday's high 67?
70.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. It's February 2nd. Did Groundhog see a shadow? I didn't follow the Groundhog. Did you follow that?
So six more weeks.
6 more weeks of winter?
Yep.
That's fine. That's all good. Well, that just means we're going to have a great spring and summer. See how positive I am? I love this town. I love being downtown. I love St. Louis. I think we're an incredible sports city with sports in our heart. I'm wearing a Worldwide Technology Raceway hoodie today because I'm excited about the new season there. On the other side of this immediate downtown slash Metro East area would be downtown West, where St. Louis City SC is about to get cranking here at the end of February with their first games just to the west of their midtown. Did you see that place rocking on Friday? Chaffetz Arena was awesome. St. Louis University is going to have a good basketball team. Don't be discouraged by the performance. They played a very good Dayton team. That could very well land itself in the NCAA tournament. That looked like a team that's going to go win the A-10 tournament to me. I think Dayton is still the best team top to bottom. But we'll see. That's how SLU's going to get in. Busch Stadium is about to fill, and I know that the attendance has been down, but it'll get back. They'll get it back eventually, and it's still the crown jewel of the region, the St. Louis Cardinals. Blues pack them in. Not a very good team, as we've found out, but still loyal fan base. Everybody absolutely loves them. Battlehawks are about to play inside the dome. You know, it's getting to be that time of year where all the sports converge, a lot of buzz, weather warms up. We'll have golf being played throughout the area and tennis and pickleball and everybody plays outside. And we'll have the Stifel Charity Classic is going to be taking place in September with PGA Tour champions coming. Next year, Bell Reeve's going to have the BMW Championship. There's always a lot going on in sports. But did you just hear that story that Stuart McMillan did about the alderman? Now, it might not have gotten a lot of attention because it was on a Friday and it was the end of the week, and so it just sort of rolled into the Saturday papers and everybody sort of does their thing over the weekend. And I know I'm a news anchor and I report the news, but this is sports on a Sunday morning and I'm going to relate this to sports. What the heck are you guys doing in the Board of Aldermen? What are you doing? Has anyone taken a trip? Well, I know that there have been some trips taken by some folks out there, but have you taken trips to the cities in the Midwest? Let's start there. And how they are kicking our rear end right now when it comes to sports, drawing tourists, conventions. We're a good city with good people, and that's what matters. The Board of Aldermen running into each other, I'm not picking sides here, just the whole, I'm talking about the whole thing. City politics right now, regional politics right now. Our leaders, what are you doing to make us better as a draw regionally, as a sports city once proud, and we still in our hearts have it, and you know we come out and support it. Why aren't you making downtown better? We just got handed a lump sum of money because we had the strength to go fight Stan Kroenke in the NFL. We ended up settling with him. Probably could have gotten some more, quite honestly, if we let that drag out. I know it would have gone to appeals and blah, blah, blah. Could have gotten more, but we got some. We got $790, gave it to attorneys, about $200 of it. Split it up, that's fine. We still haven't spent a dollar of it. We can't figure out how to spend it. We have people walking out of meetings. We have people going this direction and that direction. Why do we continue to run into each other in the Board of Aldermen and spin our wheels? Why? Why is Cincinnati killing us downtown? Cincinnati, same thing, on a river. A good town. I was just there. Downtown looks great, but people are out in restaurants having the time of their lives. 6 o'clock, there's a line getting into restaurants downtown. Hotels, doormen, hello, you know, traffic going by. Indianapolis just drew, what, 70-plus thousand for their for the wrestling there at the Dome? Drew, what was that? Was that the Royal Rumble? What was that?
Oh, the WWE?
Yeah, WWE. Yeah. Indianapolis crushes us when it comes to conventions and sports. Crushes us. Nashville, obviously, they've run away with it with all the parties going on down there. Regional cohesion. Kansas City, regional government, and love and money. What the heck is going on around here? I mean, we've got a great place. I'm looking at downtown right now. Great facilities, great history, great museums. Infrastructure, yes, could use some help. But highways going in and out of here. You know, big, wide highways. We don't have a ton of traffic. We are situated where small towns all around St. Louis want to come here. They want a vacation here. They want to hang out here. They look at us as a big booming city. And we're still sitting here spinning our wheels, public safety, crime, trying to figure out how to remove snow and ice from the roads over and over again. Not just city. I'm going to include everybody in this because we all need to come together as a group. I know I'm banging on city politics and downtown, but this is a regional issue. Please, I'm just begging you on behalf of the citizens of St. Louis to our city government in particular, based on what happened Friday night, please get it together and help us because we're a great place and we love sports. We love art, we love music, we love restaurants, we love to party, and we don't want to let that go, ever. Thank you very much. All right. There was a huge trade last night in the NBA overnight that we're going to talk about at 10:45. Luka Doncic goes to the Lakers. That is amazing. At 10:30, Josh Schertz, the head coach of the Billikens, will join us. I just mentioned, don't give up on them just yet. But at 10:15, coming up in just 2 minutes, we're going to be joined by the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. Dennis Gates had himself some night, but afternoon in Starkville, Mississippi. That was special. What Caleb Grill, the Missouri Tigers, did. They went down and they drilled Mississippi State yesterday. It was an incredible road win for Missouri. They're a March Madness dream right now because of this shooter, Caleb Grill, and the overall team, period. They're going to be really, really tough to stop. I will let you know that right now. We're going to talk to Dennis Gates about that in just a couple of minutes. 10:14, sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX.
Billikens win! Billikens!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
10-16, and I'm very pleased to have this next guest on the show. He is the head coach of the Missouri Tigers, and what a day they had yesterday. They took it to Mississippi State, 88-61. They win by 27. I've been following Mizzou my entire life. I did not see this coming. The biggest road win over a ranked team ever for Missouri. The previous was by 13 points, and that was in 1956. That is incredible. Now, they've had some great wins, but that is dropping the hammer on somebody. Number 20, Missouri beats number 14, Mississippi State. And Dennis Gates wins his 100th game as a coach. Congratulations, Coach, on that and on your victory yesterday. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. Obviously, a great time to spend with you guys today after that tough road game we had, in addition to the achievement of 100 victories. It takes a lot of people to get that accomplishment. Definitely. I share that with each of you.
It sure does. It takes a lot of people, and there are a lot of people involved on travel, on practice, on getting yourselves ready for the game, and Missouri got the job done. I want to start with this. So we have, you and I don't know each other all that well. I've been following your program, but I've met you a couple of times and have been able to spend some time watching your team. But you and I have a very dear mutual friend in Norm Stewart. My dad and Mr. Stewart, Coach Stewart, were very, very close. And I learned a lot from him through the years. And I wanted to start with this, because when you first were hired and you took over the program, it really warmed my heart and my family's heart to see you paying such a great tribute to Coach and understanding the history of what he did and appreciating that. Tell me a little bit about that relationship between you and Norm Stewart and the history of the Missouri program.
Well, first of all, it speaks for itself. I think the history of this basketball program and institution, when you look at the growth of college athletics and college basketball as a whole, Norm Stewart put this logo, put this city, put our institution at the top nationally. He's an individual that helped start it, Coaches versus Cancer, obviously going through his battle as a survivor. But more importantly, you look at the success, the many young people that he definitely touched, but also coached. And he's a Hall of Fame coach in every right. He should be voted into the Hall of Fame. So for me, it was very, very important that I met or even talked to or established a relationship with Norm Stewart. And he's been one of my great supporters, friends, confidants, being able to sort of give me constructive criticism. Now, he's not going to be short for words. Now, he's going to tell you the truth if you've got ears now. So for me, I love that part of it, and, you know, I just appreciate him.
I do as well, and there is just something very special about that firmness, but also that sparkle in his eye and that smile. He is just so incredibly wise, isn't he, Coach?
Absolutely. He gave so many years. He and his family gave so many years to this institution, and I, you know, for me, I wanted to talk to every single head coach, starting from Norm Stewart, then Quinn Snyder, then you got Mike Anderson, Kim Anderson, Frank Haith, Konzo Martin. I wanted to talk to every coach and just talk to them about their experience, and they all definitely said the same thing of how special this place was and is, and it's dear to their hearts and their families' hearts as well.
I feel like you have such great support, and I know that it is not easy to guide a program, and you had to go through some bumps last year, and when you go winless in conference, it's not fun, but I felt like, I wanted to get your perspective, is that people in Columbia, for the most part, really didn't blink. They felt like, based on what you had done previously and what they projected you to possibly do, they had your support, they had your back. Did you feel that at Mizzou and in Columbia?
Well, I appreciate everyone who gave me an opportunity to be a head coach, first and foremost. I don't take it lightly. Obviously, when the job came open here at Mizzou, you know, I just looked at the big picture, and the big picture is this is a great institution. And that's what it took for me to leave Cleveland State. And obviously the support of our Board of Curators president and then AD Desiree Refrancois. The opportunity presented itself, and, you know, I jumped at it, and it was something that I don't look back at. I conversed with my mentors. They said the same thing. So for me, the support is holistic. Now, it comes with the territory. Everyone wants a winner, you know, and that's part of it. But Coach Hamilton taught me something during my time as an assistant coach. He always gave me a story from his 1993-94 season at Miami when they went 0-18 in their conference. It was plagued with injuries and everything under the sun, but he went 0-18. He didn't talk about all the Kentucky days that he shared, but he talked about this specific time, and I probably got 100 renditions of that season. And it's about your mentorship, being able to get you through storms. It's easy to teach somebody when you are winning championships, cutting down nets, but what are you really teaching when you go through adversity? And Coach Ham wanted to transparently share that with me. And I'm thankful for that mentorship of him giving me the guidance, not only of his experience of going 0-18 in a season, but also how to get through that and navigate it and everything under that part. So I'm thankful that he gave me that guidance and he gave me that mentorship.
That's really well explained. And, you know, I watched the video of the players dousing you with water after it was announced that you had won your 100th game yesterday. And after you wiped that liquid from your face and your jacket and that beautiful gold tie, you got up in front of them. And I believe you said something to the effect of thank you for allowing me to coach you, but also be a part of your lives, because there is something bigger than basketball going on here, isn't there, Coach Gates?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I look at it from this standpoint. There's only few people that keeps a lifelong title in a young person's life. And you can think of the other ones. I'll just focus on my career. But I'm always going to be their coach. When they're 50 years old and they pull out a picture showing their children, this is Coach Gates, I don't take that relationship lightly because it's lifelong. So for me, I know how my coaches in my life impacted me at an early age. But also, I know the relationship I have with them now. And I just want for my players to have the same relationship with me that I have with my coaches and mentors who helped me get to this moment, helped me achieve some dreams, accomplish some things. But also, they helped me through life. They gave me advice. They were there during the transitions. They were there when my back was against the wall. And they gave me those encouraging words. So it's a lifelong relationship that turns into something deeper. And I'm just thankful that these young people have allowed me to coach them, be in their lives, but also their support system, their parents have definitely done the same.
This is Dennis Gates, the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. His team is 17-4 and 6-2 in a very tough SEC after beating Mississippi State yesterday. Everybody raving about your team. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of that going on around the country once people get back to all their talk shows tomorrow and they start talking about March Madness. But let's talk some X's and O's for just a minute. Your team plays a relentless style on defense. And then on offense, it does appear to me, not only do you have shooters, but you have great, aggressive rebounders on the glass. You were very good on the offensive glass to give yourselves extra possessions, extra opportunities. Is that how and what has made you effective?
Well, I think, first of all, coaching a player's heart, you can coach the physical part, but the physical can only take them to that obstacle, to that wall, that the emotional and the heart has to, you know, break through. And that's what we have to coach, and that's what I focused on the most. You know, I have great relationships with these dudes, and I tell them every day I love them. And they will run through a wall for me, and they give me their very best, not just in basketball, but in the classroom, in the community. They give me their very best every single second of their day. And that's what I ask for. That's what I ask for, and that's what they give. You know, my whole thing is you don't have to demand things from young people if you coach their hearts. They'll be willing to give it to you, and you just have to now manage it. And I'm just thankful these dudes are able to give that to me, and their parents allow them to do that. And they want to do it together. They have fun with each other, and you can just see through the videos, through social media, through the camera, the relationship is real that they have with each other. And I just thank our sports psychologist, Dr. Joe Carr, for his help in our team building, because that's a huge emphasis in my program.
That is a really good look behind the curtain there, Coach. Thank you for that. As Dennis Gates is with us, just a couple more minutes, and I could go through your entire roster. I don't like singling out certain players, but it's hard to ignore Caleb Grill.
Yeah, we're 18 strong. We're 18 strong.
You really are. It's hard to ignore Grill and what he did yesterday. I mean, I described it as he's lethal anywhere in the front court. I mean, how do you guard somebody like that? He pulls up from 35, 40 feet. That was unreal yesterday.
Well, it's tough to defend somebody's confidence. And when you have confidence like that, it's coming from different directions. It's coming from within. It's coming from his family, friends, loved ones, and it's coming from his teammates. So if you're having to second guess yourself in those situations, you're not going to have the outcome you want. But that's confidence. That's what it looks like when you pour into somebody's heart, when you tell them you love them and things like that. And Grill is an unbelievable player. He loves the state of Missouri. He loves our institution. He loves the city of Como. But more importantly, he loves his teammates, and he would not rather do it with anyone else other than his Mizzou Tiger teammates.
Last quick one. Let me drop this one on you. Your impressions of St. Louis so far as you've made your way through a few campaigns of Mizzou basketball and what the city has meant to you and your program and university.
Well, that footprint means a lot to this institution. You know, as a state institution, you know, it's important that we touch our metropolitan cities. St. Louis has been a comfort zone for me. I have developed some great relationships throughout our state, but specifically within the city. And what the city has done in return is opened their arms to me and my family, and they squeezed us tight. And I'm thankful for those relationships, friendships, and those two will last a lifetime. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, for our future students, any high school student out there that's looking for an institution, I can just let you know how special it is here in the city of Como, and we would love to have you.
It's great to visit with you. Thank you for the time. Looking forward to catching up with you again, and congratulations on a great victory yesterday in Starkville.
Thanks. I share with everybody out there, M-I-Z.
Z-O-U to Coach Dennis Gates, the head coach of the Missouri Tigers. Great to be with him, and nice to hear him on KMOX. We'll take a break. When we come back, it's the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens, Josh Schertz, joins us live. It's coming up on 1029. This is Sports on a Sunday Morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
Rebound, Johnson. Bills bring it back down by seven. Johnson for Swope on the left wing. Wants a three. Bang! Swope show! Timeout, St. Louis.
Calling KMOX Friday night. That place was rocking at Chaffetz Arena. SLU lost it to Dayton 71-63. The head coach of the Billikens is Josh Schertz. Coach, it is always great to talk ball with you. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. Appreciate you having me on. Always enjoy connecting. I'm in my 10:30 slot, so I feel ready to go.
Good. I love when you're in the 10:30 slot, and I love talking basketball with you. Our Billiken Report, sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Let's start with that atmosphere. I was there. I was in the house. I had my daughter Audrey with me, and we just ate it up. I mean, that's how the place should be, and that's how I believe it will be when you get this program to exactly where you want it. St. Louis responded Friday night, didn't they?
They were awesome. It was, you know, it's been building. You know, I thought we've had some good crowds in the league. You know, we've had a couple of pretty good wins. You know, you look at, you know, we had a top whatever, you know, 35 win over VCU and a couple top, you know, 90 wins over St. Bonaventure, St. Joe's at home, and crowd was great in those games. VCU had been the best crowd at this point, in my opinion, going into you know, Friday night, but the Dayton game, the atmosphere, the electricity, the energy of the fans, there was you know, a lot of reasons that loss was disappointing on so many levels, but at really the top of that was I was you know, heartbroken for the fans because of, you know, the energy they brought, the energy they provided, the atmosphere they created, and you want to keep those people, you know, understand, hey, we're going to, you know, we are going to get this thing right. You know, that this team is, you know, we gave ourselves a chance, but a big part of we had a chance was because the crowd kept lifting us, kept pulling us. And I thought the same thing against VCU as well. So, you know, hopefully we can build on that. And like you said, the goal is that a crowd like that we saw on Friday night becomes that's just a regular night in Chaffetz Arena. You know, at some point where that's not an anomaly or, man, that's a, you know, it becomes that's the expectation, because that was one of the best home court atmospheres in all of college basketball. Although the atmosphere we experienced on Friday night, we just got to, you know, be a little better as a team. But the fans were incredible.
They were waiting for that run to happen. And when it was 34-17, I believe, was the biggest margin for Dayton. They're up by 17 early. Of course, that doesn't look good on the scoreboard, but we know in college basketball that can be reduced in a heartbeat. And you were able to close that gap almost all the way. It was 52-50 at one point. And then to Dayton's credit, they made shots. And you know what? They made shots that I think I heard you say that part of that was about your scout. They were just finding ways to get open, moving around ball screens in a way that allowed them to get some open shots, Coach.
Yeah, no question. We got it back to two there with about seven to play, and we had it to, you know, we had it to four and had a layup to cut it to two with about 3.5 minutes to play, and had some chances. We had a loose ball play we could have made. Dayton, credit them. I mean, they were, you know, they outplayed us. They deserved to win the game. I don't. There's nothing there, but yeah, we had too many breakdowns. You know, I mean, Tom, without, you know, we obviously have a very small margin for error with this team. You know. With the limitations inside the roster, you know, all the injuries and everything else. I mean, our margin for error is incredibly small, and we can't afford to have any kind of mental breakdowns. And I thought, you know, going back to the film, 9 of the 11 threes they made were on what I would call scouting report breakdowns. You know, going under a screen on a guy that we can't go under, going, you know, ball side of a down screen of a guy we gotta be chasing and take off the 3-point line, over helping and giving up an open three, getting stuck on a flare screen. But, you know, 9 of the 11 threes they made were scouting report breakdowns. That's what good teams do. I mean, Dayton's a really good basketball team. I mean, they've shown that. They obviously, you know, have a bunch of big wins, and you know, they've been a little up and down in conference play, but they were really good on Friday night, and to beat a really good team, there's a level of execution required, and we didn't meet it. And I didn't think we met it from a physicality standpoint. We got beat on too many 50-50 balls. But the biggest thing was the mental errors, and then, of course, 19 turnovers. So there was a lot of areas you could point to. We got to be better in all of them. We got to take better care of the ball. We've been really good scouting report defensively in the conference play, and we were not on Friday. And then offensively, we got to do a better job. We got to generate better shots. So we had 19 turnovers, and then we had a fair amount of what I would call shooting turnovers, where, you know, the shot selection we weren't disciplined enough in terms of our generating great shots.
And well, we all saw the VCU game. I mean, it was a tremendous defensive effort, and really offensively too. I mean, just a really, really great win over a very good VCU team that's every bit as good as Dayton, and at times has looked to actually better than them. But going back to Dayton, what did they do defensively? Was it both scheme and effort on their part? Because I thought from the very beginning, I watched how they guarded Robbie. Boy, they were bumping in that first possession. They were not allowing him to catch the ball. They were fronting him. They were pushing him. They were getting physical.
Yeah, no, they were super physical with him. I think, they guarded him kind of the way we're being guarded, which is, you know, teams are putting their four men on Robbie. They guard him with Nate Santos. They put Letang in the paint, the 7-1 guy, and basically, you know, stuck him in the paint and made him the all-time help, because they don't, you know, teams are not going to, they don't have to really account for Kalu or those guys on the perimeter. And so they're able to kind of just stick a guy in the paint there and then try to front, make it hard. They switched some stuff. They were super physical with Robbie on his dribble downs and the post up. They did a good job of helping Letang, I think, in the first half, block 3 or 4 shots where, you know, we got our shoulders by, got the ball to the rim. He was able to rotate over. We've got to do a better job of scheming this to find ways to do it. We've got to get guys recognizing when they are being guard like that, or guys in all-time help if the ball is driven. You know, that's a great time to cut and get layups. We got to do a better job there. We got to be stronger with the ball. You know, I think. But what Robbie's seen the last, you know, really going back to VCU the first time, is that, you know, he was guarded by, you know, Jack Clark by VCU. He was guarded, you know, he's going to be guarded by the opponent's four. They're going to try to switch all of his ball screens to take away his pick and pop threes, try to put him in the situations where he's, you know, going to post up, and then they're going to put their center in the middle of the lane and just say, hey, you know, you're all-time help. And that's how, you know, like obviously for Kalu, but also whether it's Dylan Warlick or Max Bakar or Amari McCautry or whomever, Killian Brokoff, they're all going to get guarded the same way. And that's why you see, you know, Dylan made two, you know, got a couple wide open threes and Killian got a couple wide open threes out there. They're going to guard those guys the same way. We just got to step up and knock those down, but also recognize cutting opportunities. And Rob's got to be much stronger with the ball than he was, the last two games with VCU. Did it differently. They doubled him. Dayton played him straight up and just sunk that guy in to help because, you know, at 7-1.
Yeah, and, you know, human nature, two things. One, I mean, he is human, so, you know, he's going to take a beating and have to adjust to it. But secondly, human nature on his part, trying to make things happen. I felt like he tried to thread the needle a few times with those passes, right? And that's what led to some turnovers. He's just trying to make something happen.
Yeah, I think he's frustrated, and I think some of those turnovers are that. I think he got the ball, you know, he got to be tougher with the ball, own his space better. He's got to hit singles. I think he was playing, you know, VCU doubled him, and I think, you know, Dayton didn't. I think he kept waiting. He was more tentative than he needed to be. Honestly, the last two drives where he got it at the top of the key, drove it, and he got the ball to the rim twice for layups. He just missed both layups, which is, you know, unlike him. I think he was just out of sorts a little bit. But, you know, those were two really good plays. Like, those were aggressive downhill drives, and that was available to him because they weren't doubling him. He is human. This is a part of the deal. Like regression, friction, adversity, like this is part of what drives growth for players, for teams. Like he's had a pretty, you know, linear career in terms of, you know, he started as a freshman, he was good, didn't have much adversity, came back as a sophomore, became kind of a, you know, a national phenomenon, had a really good team around him, and now he's having, you know, here this year has been a year of adversity for him, all the injuries, everything else, and then he came back and he was playing, you know, obviously at a really high level. Arguably as good a player as there's been for most of the first, you know, 6-7 league games. These last two have been tough, and this is part of, you know, growth is figuring out, all right, this is how I'm being guarded. This is an obstacle put in front of me. Now, how do I clear this? And that makes you a better player. That's how every good player has to adapt. You know, you come into a league and, you know, people don't know you, then you can get to your strengths and people start to adapt to you and say, okay, well, he does this, take it away. Then, you know, if you're really good, people start double teaming you and they start game planning for you. And then your game has to evolve to be able to attack those things intelligently, which makes you a better player. And that's what you see with the really good players is, you know, they see everything. They adapt to how they're being guarded. But the team's game plan for them, and certainly, you know, everybody in our league is game planning for Robbie. There's no question about that. And now this is part of his growth and development as a player is to be able to do these things at a higher level. And I think, you know, he's got the skill and the intelligence and the will to do it, and the competitive drive. He's going to be fine. This will wind up being a really good thing for him in time.
And when he got those two early fouls against Dayton, it kind of threw everything out of whack. But when you had 33 about to check in, I nudged my 14-year-old Audrey and I said, hey, watch 33. This is my guy here. This guy is a winner. I mean, he played, and did he come through for me? He made me look good. Awesome. 10 points. He was awesome, Dylan Warlick.
Yeah, Dylan's terrific. You know, he's, it's such a cool story because, like I said, he couldn't even practice until November. So it's a guy who sat out the whole summer, the whole fall. We knew we were redshirting him, and here he is, you know, playing huge minutes against VCU because he was great against VCU and he was equally as good against Dayton. And, you know, he gives us a different look than Kalu. There's some trade-off in different things, some trade-offs, you know, that you have to give up, whatever, rebounding and various things. But, you know, Dylan can shoot the basketball. He's a skilled offensive player and he buried two huge threes, but he can take you down the post, and he's so physical. He's so strong. He competes so hard. He's incredibly smart. And when you have a young guy like that, you know, freshman, usually their issues are, you know, the transition from high school to college. What usually gets most guys is they either, they're not physically ready to play. He's physically ready to play. The second one is they don't necessarily play hard enough. There's a different level of, you know, of effort at this level and physicality, and he plays hard enough. And then the third piece is, you know, they got to understand what's going on. The game at this level is more complex than it was for most guys in high school. So, and he's got a super high basketball IQ. So, you know, those three things, he just checks and clears those boxes. And he's been able to really be impactful as a freshman. I think he's just going to get better and better because he's getting more comfortable. And this week should give him a lot of confidence to come out and do what he did against VCU and Dayton, which are arguably the two best teams in the league, and to come out and do that. He should have a lot of confidence moving forward. He's going to play a ton of minutes for us here down the stretch of the season.
Last quick thing, what can you tell us about Kellen Thames and his situation?
Yeah, I mean, Kellen for right now is out. And so like I said, Kellen and I had a conversation coming out of GW, and I'm going to keep that conversation between us confidential. Kellen will talk about everything. I think when he's ready, it's really on him. But he's out for right now. I don't want to make any like sweeping statements that it's because I don't know and I don't think Kellen knows. But for right now, he's practicing, he's traveling. But he's out, and could he return this year? Of course. Could he not? Of course. We don't know. I think it's just an indefinite deal, and so. But again, he's practicing every day. Kellen's handled a difficult situation with an incredible amount of grace and positivity, and it's not easy circumstances for him. And certainly, like I said, he's a guy. I mean, I think he's a guy that's an ultimate winner, ultimate competitor. I think it kills him right now not to be out there. But he's being such an incredible teammate to the guys. His positivity, his energy, he's pouring himself into his teammates, and you can see it on the bench and everywhere else. And certainly, we're all fingers crossed that, he'll be back at some point and be at full strength. Cause, if he's back at full strength, I think he's one of the better players in the league, and he changes our team dramatically with what he can do on both ends of the floor. But we don't know what the future holds there.
I appreciate the update. He is a difference maker for sure. It's a travel day tomorrow for SLU. They visit UMass, 6 o'clock tip off on Tuesday on KMOX. I'll have the coaches show tomorrow with Rebecca Tillett at Westport Social. We hope to see you there. And Coach Josh Schertz has been with us on KMOX. Thank you so much for this, Coach. Safe travels to UMass.
Appreciate it, Tom. I'll talk to you soon, and I look forward to seeing you.
Look forward to catching up with you. Josh Schertz, head coach of the Billikens, with us, sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. When we come back, St. Louis native Brian Kamenetsky. He and his brother Andy run the Locked On Lakers podcast, and the Lakers are in the news for sure. They have landed Luka Doncic in an overnight trade. We'll tell you about it through Brian next on KMOX.
Thanks again from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Great to be back with you. It's 10:50, and we get to spend the next several minutes with Brian Kamenetsky, the St. Louis native, co-host of the Locked On Lakers podcast with his brother Andy. Brian, it's great to have you on KMOX once again. Welcome back.
That's great to hear from you, Tom.
It's great.
It takes one seismic trade in the NBA.
I had to look at my phone like five times last night before I went to bed to make sure I was reading that right. What in the heck? Luka Doncic goes to the Lakers, Anthony Davis to the Mavericks, and there were other players moved, but of course those are the big headliners. You just don't see big talent like that moving in any league, let alone the NBA.
No, and like you say, it was so big that Andy and I are looking at this, and the Lakers had just finished, they were in New York, they played a great game against the Knicks, and we were talking about that, just finished the show, but then we see this news coming in, and our first instinct was that Sham Sharania at ESPN, who broke the news, was hacked. And, we're not in the day and age that we live in. And then we started seeing it coming from other reporters and whatever. We're like, well, is this like a giant hack where the entire platform is like, we waited until it was actually on TV before we went and talked about it. That's how big of a deal this was, and shocking and out of left field. And I'm not even sure what the analog is for other sports. Like, I've never seen any deal kind of like this one.
Yeah, I told our anchor this morning, Scott Jaga, who's a big Bills fan, I said, it's kind of like if Josh Allen was traded to the Jets for the Jets' best defensive player and the Bills thought, let's go win this thing playing defense. I don't even know how to comp it either.
Something like that. I mean, Anthony Davis is an outstanding player. There's no question. He is an all-NBA level player, but he's 31 years old and is, obviously more on the backside of his prime than the front. And he's probably a top 10 player in the NBA. Luka Doncic is 25 and is, obviously going into his prime. He has been all-NBA basically every year of his career. And he's probably a top three, top four guy around the league when he's healthy. And I just like this kind of trade. You don't see this in the NBA where a team will give up their generational superstar for an older player and not demand, you know, 15 picks in return. It is hard to say whether it's Josh Allen for, you know, a defensive player, Josh Allen for, I don't know, Jaden Daniels or somebody. It's so difficult to come up with a comp, and in the NBA, it's impossible.
Yeah, it really is. And so it makes you wonder why and how, but it has happened. And now the Lakers have what I would presume to be the face of their franchise after LeBron. I mean, he's going to be a fixture for a decade in L.A., won't he?
That's the hope. Dallas, I think, clearly Dallas and their GM, Nico Harrison, had a very tenuous relationship with Luka. They were very nervous about paying him. There's concern about his fitness level. I mean, and this is pretty well documented. He's not exactly a picture of physical fitness. I think everybody understands that, but you're correct. Like, this is, it was always assumed the Lakers, when LeBron retires, whenever that's going to be, and, you know, he put up a triple-double in New York yesterday, so he's in no hurry. But when that happens, the assumption was always it will be Anthony Davis's team, and the Lakers will then look for the next star to pair with AD when that happens. But the Lakers actually moved off of Davis first, and now we'll see what happens with LeBron going forward. But yeah, I mean, Luka Doncic is their next star. Lakers always have a star, and Luka Doncic is the next one, and you would expect him to be a Laker for the next, you know, 7 or 8 years at least.
Do you think Doncic can come back from this calf injury after the All-Star break? Is that the prognosis?
Yeah, I think my understanding of this, to say the least, there's been a lot of catching up that everybody has had to do very quickly. Like, wait, how long does Maxi Kleber's contract run? Like, what's going on here? I think most of the reports that I've seen were that Luka and Anthony Davis, who's also out with an injury, he has an ab strain, are both basically on the same timeline, coming back either before the All-Star break, barely, you know, sometime early this week, later this week, I should say, or right after the All-Star break. So they're both on basically the same timeline. The difference is, and I've seen some of this, that the Mavs were worried that Luka's return from injury would be hampered by his physical fitness. He's got, you know, the calf strain, and if he's not in shape, he's going to hurt himself again. So, I mean, they were clearly worried about Luka and being in shape and having to pay him.
The Locked On Lakers podcast can be found at Locked On Lakers on Twitter and throughout social media. Brian Kamenetsky with us. And before we go, you and I can always say teammates with Sterling K. Brown, you football, me basketball. I mean,
that's right.
We got that to hang on our hat.
He was my lead blocker, you know? It's like, go open a hole for me, Sterling. I think it's fair to say that he turned out okay.
Yeah, he turned out pretty good. And I know that you and Andy are really proud of a lot of the things that you're doing in L.A., and we congratulate you on that. And thank you for representing St. Louis out there.
Oh, I really appreciate it. It's always great to catch up, and, love watching what you've done over the years at KMOX. It's just awesome.
Well, our thoughts are all with you as well. The wildfires, they're just horrible. And so we hope the best for everybody moving forward.
Cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Brian Kamenetsky with us on KMOX, Locked On Lakers, and the seismic trade of Luka Doncic to the Lakers from the Mavs for Anthony Davis. We'll be back after the news on KMOX.